Hello everyone, I'm Tobias Svanberg. I work as development leader at Ration Product Innovation at IKEA of Sweden in Älmhult in Sweden.
Hey everybody, I'm Anthony Smith, working as a product development engineer, same department as Tobias, working in Little Älmhult in Sweden.
The issue of water scarcity and the need to save water has always been front of mind for a hot and dry country like Australia. As we begin to untangle the impact of the recent drought, water scarcity and solutions to save water are more important than ever before. With an average annual rainfall of only 470 millimetres per year, Australia is the driest continent inhabited by humans, with very limited freshwater resources. Now more than ever, we need to enable not just Australians, but consumers around the world to act in their own homes to preserve this precious and threatened resource. At IKEA, we believe that climate action starts at home. And on this topic, we know that the home is the starting point for big changes in society. That's why today we are talking to Tobias and Anthony from IKEA of Sweden, who have been doing some pretty amazing things to support us all saving more water at home. Gentlemen, thanks for your time today.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here.
So if you could just tell me what your current role is, what your title is, and how long you've been doing that for.
Yeah, I can start. And it's role is called development leader. And in a unit called Range and Product Innovation at IKEA of Sweden, but fully focusing on this, what we call strategic initiative of creating the water positive home.
That's fantastic. And Anthony?
Yeah, so I'm product development engineer, reporting to Tobias, but working with Tobias for the same strategic initiative.
Fantastic. And so just to talk a little bit about the water project in water, I'm wondering if you can talk about why it's so important to save water and why it's important for a business like IKEA to be saving water.
First of all, the benefit of this is that, working for IKEA, with IKEA, you can make a huge difference. I mean, we're present in Australia, of course, but all over, soon every continent on the world with over 400 stores. So we can make a big, big impact. And if every one of us do a little action, we can make a huge impact. That's the ambition, and that's also the inspiration in a way. We also know but from this project, when we do the research, we know that somewhere 40% or almost 400 million people or our customers, the IKEA customers, are living in water stress areas, extreme areas even for some of them.
Wow.
So we have a fantastic responsibility there to help and inspire those people with cool solutions, great solutions to become a little bit more water efficient.
And you mentioned 400 million people. That's pretty crazy to think about. Is this a big problem in Europe? Is it a big problem where you're based in Sweden? Is it a problem everywhere? I'm just wondering if you have any insights in terms of where this is needed most.
Yeah, it's quite interesting when we mapped this, at least for me and for us in the project, when we mapped this, where do we have water stress and in the areas? And it's not only countries that you expect to be, where Australia is one, actually, that is sort of known having a quite high water stress, but California, South Spain, Middle East, Israel, and these areas are known as being water stressed. But also, when we map this, you see that in Benelux countries, area around London, for example, more or less the whole Spain and Italy, and even in drought periods, even Sweden is affected by this. So it's much more spread, if you say water stressed, than you first think about. So that's why it's so big impact, because we have stores all over the place.
I was going to say twice in the last 5 years in southern Sweden, we've run out of water where I live. We live out in a house in the forest. And this has been unheard of in this part of Sweden for, I think, 50 years or something. But we ran out of water. The groundwater disappeared. Our water comes from a well. I was having to drive to the local commune building and with a 1,000-liter tank of water to be able to flush the toilet, honestly. So although we think certain countries are immune to this, Sweden being one, it's not really. And if in certain areas you don't get any rain for a significant period of time, then
absolutely
you can end up in trouble as well. So that's kind of makes it more real.
I mean, that's quite astounding, because I'm from Australia, which I guess everyone thinks about as being big, hot, and dry, but we've never been in a position, certainly in my lifetime, where we've run out of water. So that's very interesting to hear that that's something that's happening in Sweden. So just for Tobias, I'm wondering if you can talk about some of the projects that you're working on at the moment.
Yeah, that's for sure. We have many projects running. I think it's close to somewhere 20 plus projects at the moment. Let's see, Anthony, you can fill in as well a little bit. But one that are the closest to reach actually the customers are the one we called Misten. It's a water nozzle that you fit to an existing tap and makes great water saving in your daily life or once you're around the bathroom and the kitchen. Maybe, Anthony, you can tell a little bit, how does it work? What does it do? I think you do this better than me.
Yeah, tell me about, I'll just try and pronounce it correctly, Mistelen. Tell me about Mistelen. I want to know everything about it.
Okay, so I mean, Mistelen is basically a retrofit device for your tap. So it enables you to reduce your tap water consumption by up to 90%. So very simple concept. It just turns the water from a normal jet coming out of your tap to like a mist. So then the flow rate becomes something like 0.2 liters per minute instead of like 5 or 6, like you would have with a normal tap. And then the water is coming out at such a high velocity. It's good for washing your hands. It's more than enough for brushing your teeth and things like that. So yeah, you just get a significant water saving from your tap, which is pretty cool.
That's great.
You heard that he said 90%. You can actually save 90%. It's dramatic.
I mean, that's absolutely incredible. And can I assume that Mistelen means mist in Swedish?
Yeah, that's a good assumption.
More or less.
Maybe no, I can please. Tell you, I need to tell about one more project at least. That's the very first one that are hopefully reaching customers next spring, this Mistelen. But another interesting is that we will start a project where we recycle shower water. So you have like a closed loop showering where you install this in your existing bathroom, in your shower, a retrofit solution. And this we will just now start actually together with an innovative startup company in Denmark. But this will take a little bit longer before we reach customers. But this is really awesome. This is a product for Australia, I think. Where you can make big savings. We know that in the shower is the place where you consume the most water in your home. So there we can make a difference.
What will a product like Mistelen, what will that mean for consumers? Like how much can they expect to save once this comes onto the market? And you said spring we should expect it. And should that be expected all over the world or just in Sweden?
We hope that we launch it actually in Southeast Asia, Australia, and those countries first, not Sweden. Sweden is not the primary market. We hope to reach a place where it's more useful.
And what will it mean for people who have access to this product? How much water do you think they'll be saving perhaps in a year or a month? Or what's the benefit to them?
If you make a quick calculation here, Anthony, what how much is it? If you, you put this in your wash basin or your toilets?
I mean, I have a whole spreadsheet on this with all the calculations and savings, but of course, I've not researched that before this interview. But I mean, if you imagine, if your normal tap runs at 6 liters per minute and you're saving 90%, then during a day, then you've got to think about all the times you wash your hands, times you clean your teeth, other activities, cleaning. So instead of maybe using, what do we say, Tobias, taps is, if you say we use 150 liters per person per day in Europe, taps is like 20% of that maybe. So maybe 30 liters per day is used from your tap. So maybe you can reduce that to 3 or 4. I mean, you have to make some assumptions that not everybody will use it on the extreme mist function the whole time.
I mean, that's quite a big reduction in the amount of water. And this is quite small. Like how does it sort of work? Because at the moment I'm imagining something that you stick on to the end of your tap or your faucet and then it in some way compresses the water. Tell me about how it works and what it looks like.
Yeah, I mean the technology itself, I mean it comes from mist showers, the technology for mist showers comes from agriculture, from spraying crops with chemicals and stuff. But it's a small device, more or less the size of the aerator that's already on the faucet, actually. So you remove your old aerator and you reuse some of the components for that, and then you use that to refit it to the faucet. But it's, at the moment, it's just a white plastic device. I mean, we haven't concentrated on how it looks particularly, but it's relatively small. You twist it because it has the two functions. You can have the mist, which is the 0.2 liters per minute, or you can have a spray mode, which is like 5 liters per minute. Yeah, so it's really simple. I mean, the concept is really simple. I mean, the tricky bits and the bits we've had to work hard on is durability and making sure it's, you know, it needs to last as long as the tap lasts.
Yeah.
But then also the installation, I mean, it's got to be easy. And yeah, during this project, I think there's maybe five or six main different types of faucet fittings globally. So then we have to make sure that this fits all, you know, all the different faucets, which has been a challenge also.
And people may not be familiar with the concept of democratic design, but I'm wondering if you can talk to how Mistelm fits into the democratic design process that IKEA uses when it comes up with a new product.
Is that one for you to base on me?
let's repeat the democratic design. It's form, function, quality, cost, and sustainability, right? We want to deliver on all these five factors. It's rather easy, actually, to do products with and delivering to one or two of them. But when you need to fulfill all of them, all five of them, it's quite a challenge.
Yeah. And
just to give an example more than the actual process, it is, we're working here together with another startup, an innovative startup based in Stockholm called Altered, which did the original Misten, if you call it, which they launched and the very first one on I think a Kickstarter campaign. But then they reached customers on around 40, 50 euro. What is that in Australian dollars? I don't know. But,
well, that's about double. So it'd be about $80.
Let's say 1800. So if cost has been one aspect here, is, for example, we're going to retail this for 5 euros.
Wow.
Which is then 10 Australian dollars. That is, all the work connected to that is, of course, massive. And then if you talk, that's cost aspect, and you talk function, we have added, like Anthony said, we have a mist function, but we also have a spray function. So you can actually quickly and convenient fill up a glass or even a pot of, for boiling pasta and so on. So we have added a function, so one more. So it's double function now compared to before. And then we are looked into the materials, of course, in sustainability aspect. Instead of chromed metal, we are now into a plastic, partly recycled plastic, and so on. And then also mentioned quality, which is one of them, is this endurance, that it got to be lasting. We need to be able to prove that it lasts for, I think we do a cycling test of over 30,000 cycles on this little mist nozzle. So I think, I mean, that's how we work, and you tick off all aspects of this democratic design.
Yeah.
And you need to balance them so you actually deliver all of them.
That's fantastic. And so you mentioned it's made out of partly recycled plastic. Is that right?
Yeah, we're looking at the shell, the outer. Yeah, it's hard to say when you don't see the actual product, but the outer handle or shell, we aim to be done in recycled. What material is it?
ABS? It's recycled ABS. But even now we're discovering new plastics for some of the other parts. I mean, it's got some engineering plastics in it because it needs to be tough and it needs to last. But now almost daily there's new materials coming out. So there's an engineering bioplastic that we can begin to use, which we hope to use from the beginning. So instead of using oil based, it comes from castor oil, I think, this plastic. So you know, wherever we can, we're making the difference.
Now, this is not something that you would ordinarily expect to see when you go into an IKEA store, because most people would probably think going to IKEA means buying a chair or buying a sofa, but this is a sort of quite a new product. And I'm wondering, how do you start with making a product like this? Like, what is the journey where you start to think of, you know, how are we going to start saving water? And I'm also wondering, how long has this product been in development for?
Yeah, I think the starting point is knowing the big problem that we talked about before, a little bit, this almost 400 million people that we know have the need of saving water. And then it's a part of combination of coincidence and research that we run into this solution and this very, very small company. I think at that time there were two people in a small little garage in Stockholm that came up with this innovation to make and create this mist. And then running into that opportunity in combination of knowing the big global problem, then we say, okay, here we have an opportunity to act on, and we open up the possibility to collaborate. But for IKEA Sweden, this is new. We are really beginners in starting collaboration and cooperations with startups and innovators like this. So Misten is one of the very first projects we do like this, working with small innovators.
It sounds like it's just the beginning for this style of product, because when you think about what homes will look like in the future, there's going to be a whole sort of set of water saving measures. Surely this is just the beginning, though. Homes are going to have to be saving water in all sorts of ways.
Absolutely, yes. This is only then addressing the tap in the sink or in the wash basin. We have actually decided on working on the five activities that consumes the worst water, like I said before, the shower. But then after the shower is the toilet. And then after that, it's the laundry. And then it comes to the taps and the wash basin sinks. But also cooking and drinking water, of course, we'll also address. So this is only the beginning.
And how important is cost in all of this when we're talking about how much it will be and how you sort of make something that cost something originally cost something much cheaper? How important has that been in the process of developing this product?
It's very, very important. It is absolutely on the top, but it is back to this democratic design that it needs to balance out with the other four factors of the democratic design, so it doesn't take it over. But absolutely, it is. You shouldn't say that it's the important, most important, but like we say, and it's actually happening quite often, is that we try to put a price tag on such a project like this as well from the beginning. Where do we want to? What kind of price level do we want to reach here from the beginning? Yep. And we put this in the five as a target, and then you work very, very hard to be able to fulfill that together with all the other aspects. So we try to price tag it at the very early startup of all projects, actually. We do fail here and there, but in this case, we were actually quite spot on from the beginning.
But I think for this project as well, to really make a difference, to save water, it has to be low cost. Otherwise, we won't sell any. We have to have the volume. And so I think the cost is more important than the profit, for sure. I mean, the profit's more or less at the bottom of the list for these projects at the beginning, at least.
I think that's right. And something that is often talked about is this concept of democratic sustainability and the need to democratize sustainability solutions, because if they're unaffordable for people, then people won't access them. And obviously that means sustainability overall is impacted. So it's very encouraging to hear that IKEA is going down this path. Just wanted to go back a step and talk about some of those challenges. I wonder if you can talk to what challenges you've experienced along the way for this product specifically and how you've overcome them.
We have had many. I think we've been testing and retesting the function and the durability, the quality, and so on this. And one, I think the biggest challenge was actually, it's more than one, but let's pick one.
Where to start?
Where to start? I think one of them is maybe not the absolute biggest. It's for us as a big corporate organization to get used to work with very quick moving startup within a couple of people that are, they think we are so extremely slow, and we are doing everything we can to run as fast as we can, and they still think we are not even close to what they are doing. That has been one of the challenges. They are much quicker than us and moving and taking decisions than we are in IKEA. That's been one learning, and that's going to continue. We will have that struggle with many of those kind of corporations. But we need to shape up and be much quicker. But another big challenge was, you remember, Anthony, the day, was it a year ago, approximately, when we had to make the call of saying no to the original solution and drop it completely and go all in for plan B.
Oh, wow.
That's about a year ago. That was a rough, tough decision. We've been testing and working so hard for one solution, and then
we had a design concept that we thought was good. And we had several at the beginning. It was the one we chose. You know, that we thought this is going to be the great one. So we were working on it for like a year, and then, like Tobias says, we were having problems, and then we were testing, and it was failing. We were testing, it was failing, and then we got to a point where it was like, well, we're going to have to start again, more or less, or just stop and do something different. And then I can't remember how it came about, but then we got talking to another partner of ours, an industry partner, and then we realized that there was another solution which was more or less staring us in our face, which was kind of a different technology, actually, to solve the durability issues, because that was the big problem. It was failing after a few hundred cycles.
Yeah.
And then within weeks, we'd solved it. We proved it really quickly, and then we were back up and running again. But that was the biggest challenge, I guess, was to cut our losses on the solution we've been, been flogging for a while. I mean, we'd made development tools, we'd invested a lot of time and effort, and it was going to be so cheap to do it this way. Yeah, so that was kind of a tough. And maybe we learned a little bit. You know, maybe we should have had a plan B earlier. Maybe we should have tried something else earlier. I mean, there's lots of things you can say in hindsight. But we also learned a lot about materials, durability, combinations of materials. These are all the things that were causing us problems. So it worked out good in the end.
Towards a brighter future, you overcame the challenge.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I learned a lot for sure.
Yeah, and then the product in the end is so much better than you know it was ever going to be at that point.
I'm interested in this testing process. I'm imagining some sort of room out there in the Swedish forest with 1,000 taps, with 1,000 mistles attached to them, running water all day.
Exactly like that, yeah.
Can you tell me about how you test a product like this and how the testing process has impacted the overall product?
Yeah, there's kind of two sides to products like this when you're working with water. There's the initial development testing you do, which is very much in-house in your own test lab where you're proving the concept and making sure it works for a period of time. But then there's because this is, it attaches to a tap, it's drinking water that goes through it. So what you make it from, how it's molded, certification, it's a big aspect. And the reason things take a long time within water is because of testing and certification. You have to test things to death. And the testing we're more referring to in terms is the development testing, actually, where we've been testing and failing. We don't do that in the test lab here, but we have a partner very close to us in the Netherlands that does it for us. So
it's also very, very much hands-on testing. Just go around the corner and hijack a toilet. And so many colleagues, when me and Anthony steps out of the toilet, and both of us been in there all wet, been spraying this mist all over the place. And I'm wondering, why are you blocking our toilets? Yeah, we have to install this with the proper, pressurized water in the real conditions and all that. So it's really also super low tech, hands on things. Mm. But our toilet meetings, they are famous in iOS after this, I could say.
So, Tobias, I just wanted to go back a step and talk about some of these smaller sort of businesses that you're working with. Is there anyone doing anything out there at the moment that you would love to work with and that you think would be a really good match for IKEA?
I think we are starting quite a few small startup sort of dream partners right now that will chase us back to this on speed and creativity and innovative thinking. So we have quite a few. One of them is this Danish company that we do with what we call a closed loop showering project with. They call Flow Loop. It's nothing secret with that because we are ready to start with it. That is one of the very, very interesting. It gives us a lot of challenges. So that, in that sense, it's lots of dream. It's a dream partner in that sense. All these startups that are quick and lean and move the way we want to do it, but we don't manage.
Yep.
Then we also work with big industrial partners as well that are very specialized and the absolute world leader in their little niche industrial wise with small technical solutions and so on for different applications. We work with them as well. But I was thinking we don't have any partner actually in the Australian continent. We had a couple of Teams meeting with some of them, but we would like via this actually to reach out if anyone in Australia in the startup scene or industry think IKEA is the green partner, why reach out to us? That would be, we're really looking for innovative water companies, startups from Australia. That would be awesome to hear from.
Well, if any innovative water companies are listening to this podcast, please get in touch with Tobias, because it sounds like IKEA would love to work with you. So that would be really good. I wanted to ask about the closed loop shower, and I've forgotten what the Swedish word is for it. Is there a timeline for that, and can we expect to see that anytime soon?
But learning from the Mistan that we have to redo everything a year ago, it's scary to give promises. But
yeah,
we have, of course, a plan for it, but we are looking at a 1.5-year development plan for putting first of these into a pilot, into people homes in very, very small scale, a few pieces here and there. Then after that, it needs to go into what we call design for manufacturing and industrialization phase. That's something else. That's probably the same amount of time as well, 1.5 years on top of that. So altogether, we're looking at somewhere 2.5-3 years. I hope it will be much faster, but the realistic plan is probably around those timelines.
And are you in any position to talk about how it works? Because in my mind, it's a shower where the water is constantly being reused. Is that how it would work?
How much can we relieve of this secret, Anthony? Or
I think I give it to you. You more or less hit the nail on the head there. I mean, you shower in your own water, the concept is that the shower cleans the water for you. So you're not showering in dirty water. You're showering in your own clean water, more or less. And I think we have a challenge for customer perception on this. You know, that can't be a good thing to do, but it's better than taking a bath where you're sitting there in your own dirty water. I mean, this water has been circulated. It's been filtered. It's been cleaned. Any bacteria. Yeah, disinfected. Yeah, exactly. Any bacteria has been killed. And when the next person comes in the shower, they're not showering in your water. They're showering, it has fresh water for each shower. So I don't think there's any, there's nothing secret to say that. It's just more how you do it is the kind of the challenge in terms of technology and components and all the rest of it. So.
Well, we look forward to seeing that one arrive
very soon. Can we put you down for a test?
Please.
Home test, yeah?
You can do it live at home with Aaron, and I'd be very happy to.
Yeah, we'd love to do that, yes.
See you in Sydney in 12 months.
I just wanted to ask both of you what's next, because it sounds like you're both tackling some really important issues, water being one of them. But what's next? What's coming down the pipeline in the future?
We have quite a few. Like I said, we have over like 20 concept projects running. But I think in our world, interesting and a bit new to IKEA is we're looking at laundry and the future of laundry. How would that look like, and how would that be solved in the future? Can we continue doing that? The laundry machine today is using about 50, 55 liters of water, and then you heat it to lots of temperature. It releases a lot of microplastics and so forth when it drains the machines and so on. I think that we have quite a few interesting ideas there. I think that's one of the bigger challenges for us, because we're quite new in IKEA for that as well. We're also into toilets, which is maybe a secret, actually. I shouldn't say that, but okay, it's said. That's another one where we flush away. Can we continue, like, I don't know how it's in Australia, but in Scandinavia, we flush down mineral water down the drain in the toilet. And is that the way for the future, really? I think we need to do that in a different way. Mm. And we want to be part of put a solution to market on that.
Sounds like there's some exciting stuff coming along.
Some big challenges.
Yeah, some huge challenges. And I think challenges that places, especially like Australia, would really respond to. We obviously have been through one of the worst droughts in history. And we saw our dam levels drop to really frightening levels. And we had water restrictions come in, compounded by a bushfire crisis. So water is something that I think people are definitely thinking about. And those solutions, I think, will be much needed in Australian homes in the future. I wanted to thank you both so much for your conversation today. I think it's been really fascinating, and best of luck to you for the future in all things water at IKEA.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. We want to do a follow-up in a year or so.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Thank you.